Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, and welcome to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist and a Laguna Beach local. And this show is, this is actually my second show, is a show about our moods, our minds, and our real lives. It's live every Sunday morning at 8 a.m., and you can listen, obviously, on the radio or through an app, the KX93.5 app, or you can just play back my podcast at your convenience. So basically, we're going to talk about all things therapy-related, basically things like love, sex, secrets, children, parenting, career, pretty much everything you can think of we're going to delve into and explore how we live, love, hide, and define our lives. So I have a private practice in Laguna Beach. In Newport Beach, but I live in Laguna Beach. And I've always had a great passion for sharing information and sharing therapy topics. And so last week we talked a bit about vulnerability and having to be the best in Orange County and in our lives and all of the pressure that creates. And this week we're going to talk about a pretty taboo topic, but the topic is affairs. Something that pretty much we universally experience, but we very rarely talk about. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk a little bit more about affairs.
So far.
KX93.5, Laguna's only FM.
And welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. And so this morning we are talking about affairs. And in a few minutes, I'm going to play you a TED Talk clip by a woman named Esther Perel. She's a psychotherapist who has spent the last 10 years really doing work in her practice and around the world on the concept of affairs. So the truth is that while affairs are universally prohibited, they are also universally practiced. And it really depends on how you define affairs. Let's say, do you think it's sexting, staying secret on your dating apps, porn, emotional connections with a colleague, connecting on Facebook with an old friend? And so because our definitions are so vast and varied, the estimates are between 25 to 75% of relationships are affected by infidelity. And that's a pretty significant number. The other issue is that as a result of our roles changing, you know, historically marriage served a certain purpose in terms of property and value, and everyone kind of knew their roles. But now, because of our evolution, everything is up for negotiation. So that means we have to negotiate, you know, what our chores are, what our roles are, what our responsibilities are. And with the addition of our internet culture and those types of things, it has really created a world where we have access to infidelity, other people, all of the time. And so I thought we would really just sort of dive into this topic today. I actually discovered this woman doing my own research through podcasts and found her and just thought she was really interesting. She is Belgian. You will, when you hear the clip, you'll notice she has, it sounds like a French accent, but she is Belgian. And so I want to play you a little bit of the clips. There are three separate ones, and then I'm going to talk about each of them in between. But what I really like you to think about as you're listening is just opening your mind to all that the idea of affairs encompass and the reality of how they affect our lives. And then, you know, let's say you have this experience in your marriage or in your relationship, what are you going to do about it? You know, you can repair, you can divorce, you can stay unhappy, but I'd like to offer, and so does Esther, that there are other alternatives as well. So at this moment, I'm going to actually go ahead and begin a TED Talk clip. This is based on Esther Perel's work in the book called The State of Affairs, Rethinking Infidelity.
People cheat. And when we say infidelity, what exactly do we mean? Is it a hookup, a love story, paid sex, a chat room, a massage with happy endings? Why do we think that men cheat out of boredom and fear of intimacy, but women cheat out of loneliness and hunger for intimacy? And is an affair always the end of a relationship? For the past 10 years, I have traveled the globe and worked extensively with hundreds of couples who have been shattered by infidelity. There is one simple act of transgression that can rob a couple from their relationship, their happiness, and their very identity, an affair. And yet, this extremely common act is so poorly understood. So this talk is for anyone who has ever loved. Adultery has existed since marriage was invented, and so too the taboo against it. In fact, infidelity has a tenacity that marriage can only envy. So much so that this is the only commandment that is repeated twice in the Bible. Once for doing it, and once just for thinking about it. So how do we reconcile what is universally forbidden, yet universally practiced? Now, throughout history, men practically had a license to cheat, with little consequence, and supported by a host of biological and evolutionary theories that justified their need to roam. So the double standard is as old as adultery itself. But who knows what's really going on under the sheets there, right? Because when it comes to sex, the pressure for men is to boast and to exaggerate. But the pressure for women is to hide, minimize, and deny. Which isn't surprising when you consider that there are still 9 countries where women can be killed for straying. Now, monogamy used to be one person for life. Today, monogamy is one person at a time. I mean, many of you probably have said, I am monogamous in all my relationships. We used to marry and had sex for the first time, but now we marry and we stop having sex with others. The fact is that monogamy had nothing to do with love. Men relied on women's fidelity in order to know whose children these are and who gets the cows when I die. Now, everyone wants to know what percentage of people cheat. I've been asked that question since I arrived at this conference. It applies to you. But the definition of infidelity keeps on expanding. Sexting, watching porn, staying secretly active on dating apps. So because there is no universally agreed upon definition of what even constitutes an infidelity, estimates vary widely, from 26% to 75%. But on top of it, we are walking contradictions. So 95% of us will say that it is terribly wrong for our partner to lie about having an affair, but just about the same amount of us will say that that's exactly what we would do if we were having one. Now, I like this definition of an affair. It brings together the 3 key elements. A secretive relationship, which is the core structure of an affair. An emotional connection to one degree or another. And a sexual alchemy. And alchemy is the key word here. Because the erotic frisson is such that the kiss that you only imagine giving can be as powerful and as enchanting as hours of actual lovemaking. As Marcel Proust said, it's our imagination that is responsible for love, not the other person. So it's never been easier to cheat, and it's never been more difficult to keep a secret. And never has infidelity exacted such a psychological toll. When marriage was an economic enterprise, infidelity threatened our economic security. But now that marriage is a romantic arrangement, infidelity threatens our emotional security. Ironically, we used to turn to adultery. That was the space where we sought pure love. But now that we seek love in marriage, adultery destroys it. Now, there are 3 ways that I think infidelity hurts differently today. We have a romantic ideal in which we turn to one person to fulfill an endless list of needs. To be my greatest lover, my best friend, the best parent, my trusted confidant, my emotional companion, my intellectual equal. And I am it. I'm chosen. I'm unique, I'm indispensable, I'm irreplaceable, I'm the one. And infidelity tells me I'm not. It is the ultimate betrayal. Infidelity shatters the grand ambition of love. But if throughout history, infidelity has always been painful, today it is often traumatic because it threatens our sense of self. So my patient Fernando, he's plagued. He goes on, I thought I knew my life. I thought I knew who you were, who we were as a couple, who I was. Now I question everything. Infidelity, a violation of trust, a crisis of identity. Can I ever trust you again? He asks. Can I ever trust anyone again? And this is also what my patient Heather is telling me when she's talking to me about her story with Nick, married, two kids. Nick just left on a business trip. And Heather is playing on his iPad with the boys when she sees a message appear on the screen. Can't wait to see you. Strange, she thinks, we just saw each other. And then another message. Can't wait to hold you in my arms. And Heather realizes these are not for her. She also tells me that her father had affairs, but her mother, she found one little receipt in the pocket and a little bit of lipstick on the collar. Heather, she goes digging, and she finds hundreds of messages and photos exchanged and desires expressed. The vivid details of Nick's two-year affair unfold in front of her in real time. And it made me think, affairs in the digital age, a death by a thousand cuts.
Okay, and so I was just playing a clip, if you're just tuning in, from Esther Perel's TED Talk on Rethinking Infidelity, based on her book, The State of Affairs, Rethinking Infidelity. So, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to go through three separate parts of her TED Talk. But basically what she was just saying is that affairs have been around since the beginning of marriage, and yet we are living in a culture and time when we are exposed to sexual content and desire 24/7. And yet we're supposed to be choosing partners and being monogamous, and this person that we've chosen, this special human being, is now going to fulfill or be expected to fulfill all of our needs. They're going to be, as she said, our greatest lover, our best friend, the best parent we could ask for. They're going to be our confidant, and we can talk to them about anything. They're going to take care of us when we're sick, and we're going to take care of them. They're going to give us emotional and intellectual stimulation and conversation. They're going to be our equal, and they're going to be irreplaceable. Now, that's a lot of things to cover in a relationship. And I do agree that I don't really know anybody who could possibly fulfill all of those things all of the time. At the same time, this lecture and my podcast today is not pro-affair. None of these concepts we're going to talk about are encouraging affairs. What we're just talking about is opening up the dialogue and also talking about some options you might have should infidelity come across your path. One of the things that she does talk about, and I want to go back over one more time, are the three concepts that define affairs. The first one, and the most important one, is that all affairs or infidelities are shrouded in secrecy. This is the main part of an affair or a violation of intimacy in terms of monogamy. The next piece is that there must be, or there's usually some type of emotional connection. And the third part is what she calls sexual alchemy. And I like this word because, or this term, because what she's saying is there's sexual energy. So even if you're telling me, well, you know, Dr. Sage, I mean, we didn't actually do anything, but there were all these text messages that were very erotic. That's still sexual energy. That's still somehow, in many ways, considered a violation of your fidelity to your relationship. And so I'm going to go back now to the second part of the clip, and we're going to continue on with why Esther Perel believes some of these things begin to happen in our lives.
Romantic ideal, we are relying on our partner's fidelity with a unique fervor. But we also have never been more inclined to stray. And not because we have new desires today, but because we live in an era where we feel that we are entitled to pursue our desires. Because this is the culture where I deserve to be happy. And if we used to divorce because we were unhappy, today we divorce because we could be happier. And if divorce carried all the shame, today, choosing to stay when you can leave is the new shame. So Heather, she can't talk to her friends because she's afraid that they will judge her for still loving Nick. And everywhere she turns, she gets the same advice. Leave him. Throw the dog on the curb. And if the situation was reversed, Nick would be in the same situation. Staying is the new shame. So if we can divorce, why do we still have affairs? Now, the typical assumption is that if someone cheats, either there's something wrong in your relationship or wrong with you. But millions of people can't all be pathological. The logic goes like this. If you have everything you need at home, then there is no need to go looking elsewhere. Assuming that there is such a thing as a perfect marriage that will inoculate us against wanderlust. But what if passion has a finite shelf life? What if there are things that even a good relationship can never provide? If even happy people cheat, what is it about? The vast majority of people that I actually work with are not at all chronic philanderers. They are often people who are deeply monogamous in their beliefs, and at least for their partner. But they find themselves in a conflict between their values and their behavior. They often are people who have actually been faithful for decades, but one day they cross a line that they never thought they would cross, and at the risk of losing everything. But for a glimmer of what? Affairs are an act of betrayal, and they are also an expression of longing and loss. At the heart of an affair, you will often find a longing and a yearning for an emotional connection, for novelty, for freedom, for autonomy, for sexual intensity, a wish to recapture lost parts of ourselves, or an attempt to bring back vitality in the face of loss and tragedy. Now I'm thinking about another patient of mine, Priya, who is blissfully married, loves her husband, and would never want to hurt the man. But she also tells me that she's always done what was expected of her. Good girl, good wife, good mother, taking care of her immigrant parents. Priya, she fell for the arborist who removed the tree from her yard after Hurricane Sandy. And with his truck and his tattoos, he's quite the opposite of her. But at 47, Priya's affair is about the adolescence that she never had. And her story highlights for me that when we seek the gaze of another, it isn't always our partner that we are turning away from, but the person that we have ourselves become. And it isn't so much that we're looking for another person, as much as we are looking for another self. Now, all over the world, there is one word that people who have affairs always tell me. They feel alive. And they often will tell me stories of recent losses, of a parent who died, and a friend that went too soon, and bad news at the doctor. Death and mortality often live in the shadow of an affair because they raise these questions. Is this it? Is there more? Am I going on for another 25 years like this? Will I ever feel that thing again? And it has led me to think that perhaps these questions are the ones that propel people to cross the line, and that some affairs are an attempt to beat back deadness and an antidote to death. And contrary to what you may think, affairs are way less about sex and a lot more about desire. Desire for attention, desire to feel special, desire to feel important. And the very structure of an affair, the fact that you can never have your lover, keeps you wanting. That in itself is a desire machine, because the incompleteness, the ambiguity, keeps you wanting that which you can't have. Now, some of you probably think that affairs don't happen in open relationships, but they do. First of all, the conversation about monogamy is not the same as the conversation about infidelity. But the fact is that it seems that even when we have the freedom to have other sexual partners, we still seem to be lured by the power of the forbidden. That if we do that which we are not supposed to do, then we feel like we're really doing what we want to. And I've also told quite a few of my patients that if they could bring into their relationships one-tenth of the boldness, the imagination, and the verve that they put into their affairs, they probably would never need to see me.
And that was the second part of a clip I'm playing from the TED Talk by Esther Perel on rethinking affairs. The book is called The State of Affairs. But we're also just generally talking about the concept of infidelity. So I'm just going to recap a little bit about the important points of her last little section there. The idea is that we live in a culture of, I must be happy, and I must do whatever it takes for me to be happy. And sometimes that involves hurting people you love. So what are we going to do with that ideology? Sometimes the idea is that mortality and the daily life struggles we all face might also be emerging in reasons why people make decisions to cheat or leave their relationships unattended and open to affairs. Now, one of the things that she talks about is that staying is the new shame. So now that we can divorce and leave, many people feel that if they decide to stay, and let me be clear, most people stay as a result of affairs. Most marriages don't necessarily split apart based on affairs. But if we stay, who are we going to talk to about the fact that we're staying? So many people have described and feel shame that, you can't let her stay. You can't accept that. And so the person who has been cheated upon often feels betrayed and yet isolated with no one to talk to. So that becomes a new issue. What happens if we do decide to stay? What are we going to do about that? And I think it just comes back to this whole concept of that if millions of people cheat, even people in happy relationships, what does that really mean for us? And why do people do that? And what are we going to do about it? So I think the other idea that I find interesting is that at the heart of affairs, she talks about the reasons why people stray. It is about sex for some people, but it's also often about novelty. You know, the brain is wired for new experiences. This is why monogamy can be very difficult. The brain is wired to explore and experience freedom, and we often want to have autonomy or sexual intensities we haven't experienced for a long time, things that bring us back to our youth, recapturing parts of ourselves and our vitality. So now we're going to just begin to ease into the third part of her conversation. But one of the last things she says as that last clip ended was that she often finds herself thinking to her patients who come in who are specifically dealing with affairs, wow, if you had just spent, one-tenth of the energy you put into creating this affair and this secret life and this vigorous experience that you had, if you just put that into your marriage, I wonder if your marriage or relationship would be as open to affairs. And I think that's so interesting and so true. And the other thing she says in her book and I think on a few other talks that she does, and I love this idea, is that if we treated our partners the way we treat our clients or our patients or our business associates, if we thought, wow, I need to nurture this relationship, I need to be present and available and take care of them, if we approached our partners that way, what would our relationships look like? I think this assumption of that, okay, I've chosen you and you've chosen me, and now we're done, and I can just expect you to be there for everything and anything without nurturing and growing and exploring, it's just not going to work, and it's just not a realistic expectation. I think it's one we've been sold through all of the Disney movies we watch and all of the romantic comedies, and it is just so beautiful to think that, okay, they have this one person for me, and that's it. And I think that that is possible, but to think that it doesn't require a lot of work is just, it's just not realistic. So now we're going to dive into the last part of Esther Perel's TED Talk regarding rethinking infidelity and the state of affairs.
So how do we heal from an affair? Desire runs deep. Betrayal runs deep. But it can be healed. And some affairs are death knells for relationships that were already dying on the vine. But others will jolt us into new possibilities. The fact is, the majority of couples who have experienced affairs stay together. But some of them will merely survive, and others will actually be able to turn a crisis into an opportunity. They'll be able to turn this into a generative experience. And I'm actually thinking even more so for the deceived partner, who will often say, "You think I didn't want more? But I'm not the one who did it." But now that the affair is exposed, they too get to claim more, and they no longer have to uphold the status quo that may not have been working for them that well either. I've noticed that a lot of couples, in the immediate aftermath of an affair, because of this new disorder that may actually lead to a new order, will have depths of conversations with honesty and openness that they haven't had in decades. And partners who were sexually indifferent find themselves suddenly so lustfully voracious they don't know where it's coming from. Something about the fear of loss will rekindle desire and make way for an entirely new kind of truth. So, when an affair is exposed, what are some of the specific things that couples can do? We know from trauma that healing begins when the perpetrator acknowledges their wrongdoing. So, for the partner who had the affair, for Nick, one thing is to end the affair, but the other is the essential, important act of expressing guilt and remorse for hurting his wife. But the truth is that I have noticed that quite a lot of people who have affairs may feel terribly guilty for hurting their partner, but they don't feel guilty for the experience of the affair itself. And that distinction is important. And Nick, he needs to hold vigil for the relationship. He needs to become, for a while, the protector of the boundaries. It's his responsibility to bring it up. Because if he thinks about it, he can relieve Heather from the obsession and from having to make sure that the affair isn't forgotten. And that in itself begins to restore trust. But Heather, or deceived partners, it is essential to do things that bring back a sense of self-worth. To surround oneself with love and with friends and activities that give back joy and meaning and identity. But even more important is to curb the curiosity to mine for the sordid details. Where were you? Where did you do it? How often? Is she better than me in bed? Questions that only inflict more pain and keep you awake at night. And instead, switch to what I call the investigative questions. The ones that mine the meaning and the motives. What did this affair mean for you? What were you able to express or experience there that you could no longer do with me? What was it like for you when you came home? What is it about us that you value? Are you pleased this is over? Every affair will redefine a relationship, and every couple will determine what the legacy of the affair will be. But affairs are here to stay, and they're not going away. And the dilemmas of love and desire, they don't yield just simple answers of black and white and good and bad and victim and perpetrator. Betrayal in a relationship comes in many forms. There are many ways that we betray our partner, with contempt, with neglect, with indifference, with violence. Sexual betrayal is only one way to hurt a partner. In other words, the victim of an affair is not always the victim of the marriage. Now, you've listened to me, and I know what you're thinking. She has a French accent. She must be pro-affair. So you're wrong. I am not French. And I'm not pro-affair. But because I think that good can come out of an affair, I have often been asked this very strange question: would I ever recommend it? Now, I would no more recommend you to have an affair than I would recommend you to have cancer. And yet we know that people who have been ill often talk about how their illness has yielded them a new perspective. The main question that we've been asked since I arrived at this conference when I say I do a talk about infidelity is, for or against? I said, yes. I look at affairs from a dual perspective. Hurt and betrayal on one side, growth and self-discovery on the other. What it did to you and what it meant for me. And so when a couple comes to me in the aftermath of an affair that has been revealed, I will often tell them this. Today in the West, most of us are going to have 2 or 3 relationships or marriages. And some of us are going to do it with the same person. Your first marriage is over. Would you like to create a second one together? Thank you.
And welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. You were just listening to Esther Perel's TED Talk regarding the state of affairs, her new book, Rethinking Infidelity. So I'm just going to go back over a little bit what Esther, excuse me, was talking about. But I do just want to quickly check in back with you in terms of what this show is about. I'm your host, Dr. Kim Sage, and I'm a clinical psychologist. And this show is really coming from my passion for sharing ideas and talking about things in a new way, talking about things that we don't often talk about. Many of these topics I'm going to be exploring on this show live every Sunday morning at 8 on KX 93.5 FM are going to be topics that I hear about in my practice, but topics that people I don't hear talking about very often. Of course, all of these things, I'm not reinventing the wheel. I know that you can find them on the internet in all kinds of podcasts, but I do really want to push myself and my guests and my listeners into, you know, exploring topics that we don't often talk about. So we're going to talk about love, sex, secrets, shame, you name it, we're going to talk about it. You can always also email me at moodywithdrsage@gmail.com. That's M-O-O-D-Y with D-R-S-A-G-E at gmail.com. With your questions or ideas. And I do also want to say that please note that everything I discuss in this show today and moving forward, and I'll keep repeating this, is that this relationship we're having on the radio does not imply we are in a therapeutic relationship. So that anything I might say or my guests might say doesn't imply that we're in a relationship therapeutically. But I highly encourage you that if you need psychological treatment, please seek the guidance of a mental health professional. Okay, now with all that out of the way, we're going to go back to this last part of Esther Perel's book and clip from her TED Talk on the state of affairs, Rethinking Infidelity, her new book, and also just based on some concepts that I've experienced in my practice and working with couples. This last part is really, I find to be incredibly helpful because she's beginning to talk about, okay, so we've all acknowledged that affairs are this very common thing. What do we do and where do we begin? And I think that, as I said before, our last little section here with her, that if you treated your partner the way you treat your clients or your associates or your other patients in life, whatever your job is, with that intensity and that effort, it might really create a relationship that had at least a much greater inoculation against infidelity. But then again, we know there are no guarantees, obviously. But I think showing up with that posture could truly be life-changing for your relationships. So, okay, now you're telling me that you've had an affair or your partner has cheated. What's the first step? What can you do to heal? I think the first thing that is super powerful is that we acknowledge, or our partner acknowledges, their wrongdoing, that they hurt us, that they are remorseful and that they have guilt. This is an extremely early beginning point of creating a healing space for the trauma of an affair. And make no mistake, an affair is traumatic, usually for both partners in the long run. But what's interesting is that most people don't necessarily feel guilt or remorse for the actual affair. they often will say, you know, I felt alive again. I felt like I could feel who I was again. I felt young again. I'm sorry that I hurt my partner, but I'm not sorry for the affair. And that's probably going to be something that would be hard to hear. But I just want to put that out there, that if you've heard your partner say that, or you've felt that, that there's, you know, that that's actually more common than not. So the first thing is, we're going to open up this new conversation. Sometimes affairs can split wide open the relationship in a new way that causes us to be real and be honest and say things that we haven't said maybe our entire lives, and for sure in the entire relationship. It can also create new ways of feeling passionate, which sounds crazy, but I've had many people in my practice come in and say, you know, he or she cheated on me, and I know I shouldn't have. This isn't coming from me, but from them. But I slept with them. I felt super attracted to them. I don't know what's wrong with me. But the truth is, the research is showing that the idea of losing someone, the idea of trying to maintain our connections with someone, can create desire in ways that we can't have even comprehended prior to them happening. So I want to normalize that a little bit. The other thing is that I liked what she talks about, which is Esther Perel, is that if you're the person who cheated, it is upon you to open up the dialogue for the other person about the affair. And the reason why you have to do this is because you are now, in part, the protector of the boundaries, of these new boundaries of your relationship. And so when you bring up the topic, I don't have to sit here and obsess about it and worry about it and think about it or hold back from what I'm feeling. Now, I'm not suggesting it's a free-for-all at all times and you just beat the person up all the time. I don't think that's going to be helpful either. But if you do want to stay and repair your marriage, you know, there's a couple parts that have to occur. So the person who had the affair needs to begin to open up the dialogue. The other thing is that for the person who was cheated upon, learning how to find connection to your self-worth again is incredibly important. Going back to the things that make you feel valued and human and real are really important. Oftentimes we've lost our way and we don't know who we are anymore. And certainly an affair can make us question at this stage of the game who we are, who our partners are, who we can trust. It can really flip our worlds upside down. One more thing I think is really important, and that is that I've always believed this, but when you ask your partner to give you all of the ugly details of their affair, where'd you go, did you like this, did you like that, you're really torturing yourself, and you are creating trauma for yourself in a way that is probably not helpful. And I understand the nature of curiosity. We want to know. And I like the idea of asking investigative questions. Questions like, what did this affair mean to you? And how did you feel when you came home to me? What were you able to express or experience with this person that you haven't expressed or experienced with me? These are the types of questions that are going to be a lot more helpful than getting down to the nitty-gritty and torturing yourself again and again and again with ideas and conversations or fantasies in your mind or playing out their experiences that you imagine they had without you that are going to honestly hurt you more. So I think that that's really important. At the end of the day, the idea of this topic today is that affairs are not going anywhere. They are here to stay. And I think that having a new paradigm and a new conversation regarding what we're going to do about them is incredibly helpful. Thinking about this experience of an affair as a black and white issue is understandable, but I would suggest it's probably not going to help you. I also like the idea of understanding that we hurt our partners and they hurt us in all kinds of ways. Certainly, a sexual infidelity is incredibly hurtful, but it's also incredibly hurtful to feel that we're indifferent to our partners, that we don't matter, to have a voice of contempt when we talk to them, to be neglectful. All of those are also incredibly hurtful. So please, when you think about this idea and you just want to stick it in this category of, well, this was just wrong. Yes, of course, it's not helpful and it's hurtful, because the truth is, even in open relationships, affairs occur and are hurtful. But it's also an opportunity for self-discovery, for looking at our relationships and our lives in new ways. And frankly, you don't even need an affair to look at your relationship in a new way. You can look at ideas of how they've hurt you, how you feel there's been neglect, and begin to open up the dialogue. But you can't change anything if you don't talk about it. You cannot heal what you don't own. So I really truly believe that couples therapy, individual therapy, finding resources and support groups or reading books, if you don't feel comfortable seeing someone, that's okay. But I would recommend that if your relationship isn't going where you want it to, and especially if you want to stay together, you're going to have to do something. You can't just sit back and expect it to just work itself out. Resentment and hurt only get stronger over time. So I will leave you with this, which are really Esther Perel's parting words. And I think this is true, that in the day and age we live in now, most of us are going to have two or three relationships in our lives, two or three long-term relationships, two or three marriages. And some people will actually have these relationships and marriages with the same person. But whether you have it with the same person or not, when you've reached the state of an affair, or when you realize that your relationship is not working and has not been working, and you don't know what to do with it, you need to acknowledge that that first relationship is over. And now you have a chance to create a new one. So I'd love for you to take a look at Esther's book, but you can also research, you know, you can Google couples therapists, you can find resources for healing your marriage. The internet and bookstores are filled with information about how to repair your relationships. I will say this about all books, and I say this to my patients, you know, take everything you read with the spirit of it. Because if you take it word for word, line for line, it's really easy to find yourself disagreeing. People sell books and write books with strong opinions, and that's okay. But remember that it's all information. You can take what works for you and what doesn't. But being open to it is the greatest way to change your life. The quality of our lives truly depend upon the quality of our relationships. What kind of life do you want to have? Thank you for listening today. You've been listening to Moody with Dr. Sage. Once again, I'm your host, Dr. Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist. And you can listen to this show live every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. on KX93.5 FM. Or listen through any one of your devices on a podcast and listen to me explore all kinds of topics. But I'd love for you to share your ideas with me. If you have some show topics, please feel free to contact me at moodywithdrsage@gmail.com or just at drsage@gmail.com. I'm happy to have conversations with you and explore ideas with you. Please remember, as I said, that this show is really just meant to serve for informational purposes only, and that it does not imply that we are in a therapeutic relationship. But if you are in need of psychological treatment, or your marriage is, or your relationships are, please seek help. Please find a mental health practitioner. And thanks again for listening. I hope you have a beautiful Sunday, and I look forward to seeing you again and talking to you again. Take care.
That you're settled down, that you found a girl and you're married now. I heard that your dreams came true. Guess she gave you things I didn't give to you. Shy, ain't like you to hold.
from the light. I hate to turn up out of the blue uninvited, but I couldn't stay away. I couldn't fight it. I had hoped you'd see my face and that you'd be reminded that for me it isn't over. Never mind, I'll find someone like you. You know how the time flies. Only yesterday was the time of our lives. We were born and raised in a summer haze, bound by the surprise of our glory days. I hate to turn up out of the blue uninvited, but I couldn't stay away. I couldn't fight it. I had hoped you'd see my face and that you'd be reminded that for me it isn't over. Never mind, I'll find someone. Nothing compares, no worries or cares, regrets and mistakes, their memories made. Who would have known how bittersweet this would taste? Never mind, I'll find someone like you. I wish nothing but the best. Sometimes it hurts instead.